Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. You can, however, send in a question for our next episode by shooting an email to upfront@kpfa.org. You can also tune in for the next edition live and ask your question over the phone then. We normally air Monday mornings on KPFA just after 7:30 news headlines. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls.
I'm Ariel Boone. We are talking about the latest news in COVID science and public health, and we are joined, as we usually are on Monday mornings at 7:34, by Dr. John Swartzberg, Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley's School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg.
Good morning.
We spoke last week about the rising COVID-19 cases in the Bay Area and why we may not want to call it a surge, but what do we know now about the case numbers compared to 7 days ago?
Well, again, we don't know much about case numbers at all because we don't keep track of case numbers. What we are seeing is the what's called percent positivity. That is the percent of people who think they might have COVID who are getting tested. That percent that's positive, that is they have COVID, has been continuing to go up. So I think we can extrapolate from that we are continuing to see a rise in cases here in the Bay Area. We're also seeing a rise in cases throughout the state of California and the western part of the United States. As a matter of fact, I think it's now 39 states are reporting an increased case positivity rate. So I think that the United States, like the United Kingdom and several other countries around the world, are having a spring, late spring, now summer, swell in cases. Nothing like what we had a year ago, but substantial number of people are coming down with COVID right now.
We are taking your questions on the latest coronavirus science. If you're listening and have questions about COVID science, give us a call at 1-800-958-9008. We had a question come in by email from our listener, Jen, who asked, I am teaching summer school. Should I be wearing a mask given the uptick in California cases? I'm concerned students might not hear me if I'm wearing a mask. I am vaccinated. If I don't wear a mask based on current wastewater data, what is my risk of exposure?
Well, Jen's question is very important, and it's a question I think many of us are asking on a regular basis right now. There's no direct advice from the Centers for Disease Control or the California Department of Public Health in terms of what people should be doing. It's a personal decision that people have to make doing their own calculus. So for Jen, one question would be, how good is the ventilation in her room? If it's not very good, one should try to optimize that. She should emphasize to the students, if they're sick, please do not come to class. For herself personally, in terms of answering the question about masking, it comes down to a large extent her risk. That is, if she's at increased risk of having a bad outcome from COVID, then in my opinion, the scales tilt towards her wearing a good quality mask, N95, KN95. On the other hand, if she's not at increased risk of a bad outcome, that levels out the decision somewhat and puts it in the realm of how important is it for her not to get COVID? By that, I mean, does she have something coming up in the next couple of weeks that are really important? A wedding, for example. Or a special occasion of another kind, then that might tilt the scales back towards being more cautious. So what I'm getting at here is that these decisions that people are making early on in the pandemic, we were told how to make a decision, and we were told what decision we should be making. In this portion of the end of the pandemic, hopefully the end of the pandemic, it's really the public health departments have really put the responsibility on the individual to do their own calculus.
We've got a couple callers on the line with more questions. We've got Larry in Fresno. Larry, what is your question?
Yes, the symptoms of COVID is spitting a lot because I don't know if I ever had COVID, but I seem to be spitting a lot. Is that a symptom of COVID? What are some of the symptoms of COVID? You know, I think I'm asymptomatic. I don't think I have it. I haven't been tested, but I've been spitting a lot. Is that a symptom?
Larry, did you say spinning or spitting?
Yeah, spitting. You know, like, you know, you spit something out your mouth, you know?
Got it. Well, the classical symptoms of COVID are respiratory symptoms. And by that, I mean nasal congestion, sore throat, increased oral secretions, which could account for increased saliva that you're spitting out. Going down in the airways, it could cause some irritated breathing, coughing, some shortness of breath. Those are all the classical symptoms of COVID. Tied to that, there are often systemic symptoms. By that, I mean that you ache all over, that you feel rotten, incredibly tired, incredibly weak, and have fever. Some people also have gastrointestinal symptoms like some diarrhea or abdominal cramping and occasionally vomiting, but that's less common. The problem with COVID is that I've given you the classical symptoms, but maybe up to 40% of people who get infected with this virus don't get any symptoms. And those people who do get symptoms, often it's like just a runny nose and it feels like allergies and that's it, or a lot of saliva that you're spitting out and that's it. So it's got what doctors call protean manifestations, meaning all sorts of different manifestations. So you can't really say, and I couldn't say as a doctor if I was examining you, that this looks like COVID or not, because it can look like so many different things. I think the safest thing to do is if something has changed, particularly like you've got more saliva now and you're spitting it out, the easiest thing to do is get tested. And if the test is negative, particularly if it's the PCR test, the one you have to go somewhere to get typically, if that's negative, it's due to something, the spitting is due to something else. On the other hand, if it's positive, then you know it's caused by COVID. So bottom line, symptoms may not be classical.
All right. If you are listening, you also have questions for Dr. John Swartzberg about COVID science, you can give us a call, 1-800-958-9008. I believe we have another listener on the line in Belvedere. William, you are on the air. What is your question?
Yes, thank you very much. I know that Dr. Swartzberg is interested in the intersection of healthcare, politics, and economics. I've been hearing Dr. Fauci being interviewed, and because of the memoir that he wrote, and one of the things that he said is that it was remarkable how quickly the mRNA vaccine was developed. And yet, I take the Reuters news service, very, very reputable, and they pointed out just about a week ago that in the spring of 2020, the Pentagon engaged in a disinformation campaign directed at the Philippines to discourage the use of Sinovac, the vaccine produced in China, which is produced by the tried and true method of the inactivated virus. And they did that, as I say, in the spring and the summer, when the Sinovac vaccine was available, but the Merck and the Pfizer weren't going to be coming online for 6 months. And so that led me to the question of, was there some sort of economic motivation to support the Merck, the U.S. companies, Merck and Pfizer, by discouraging the use of the Sinovac vaccine? And, of course, the Sinovac vaccine only has to be kept in the refrigerator, whereas to administer the Pfizer and the Merck, it has to be kept at 30 degrees centigrade below zero, which makes it really very difficult in particularly poor countries that have a warm climate. So I would appreciate Dr. Schwartzberg's perspective on what may have been involved. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry, for your really interesting question. I read about this also. I don't know if it was through Reuters or another reputable news source. So all I really know is, like you, what I've read in the news. Sinovac, to backtrack a little bit, produced by the Chinese, it turned out to not be a very effective vaccine. It was certainly better than nothing at that time, but it did not turn out to be nearly as effective as compared to the vaccines that we have. My understanding from the article was that the U.S. military was involved in, not just involved, but one that carried out this decision to have disinformation about Sinovac in the Philippines. And this had quite a bit to do with the politics between the Philippines, the U.S., and China. So I haven't read anything about a conspiracy of the United States government holding the vaccine in Philippines, that is Sinovac vaccine, to protect the market for the mRNA vaccines. I haven't read anything about that. The explanation that I understood from the articles that seems sufficient to me, but I don't know more than that, was that this had to do with the tensions between the Philippines and the U.S. with China. But, you know, you're bringing up a very important point, and that is, why are we conflating politics, partisan politics, with the science of vaccines? And it's tragic that, and this is an example that you're bringing up, William, but it's tragic that that we do that. And that it contaminates our thinking about these vaccines. So that's all I can say about it at this time. I don't know anything more.
We've got a couple more callers on the line, listeners with questions. We'll go to Novato for our next question. John in Novato, what is your question for Dr. Schwartzberg?
Hi there. Thank you for this. And anyway, I am part of that new wave, I guess. I just had COVID. And so the question probably had plenty of times before is that equivalent to a vaccine? And is that, should I not worry about vaccinating for a while?
So. Hi, John. Yes, you're absolutely right. You have been vaccinated, but you got vaccinated by the virus itself as opposed to a vaccine, which is the reason for vaccines is to make sure people are immune to infectious diseases so they don't get infected by the real culprit that can make them terribly sick. So you have good protection right now. You'll have good protection perhaps for a few months. So you don't need a booster right now. The CDC recommends that within a few months, I think it's three, but you'd need to check after you've had COVID, you can get a booster. But depending upon how things are, you're probably in good shape until the new updated vaccine becomes available in the fall.
We've also got Pat in San Francisco on the line. Pat, good morning. And what is your coronavirus question?
Hello, John, Dr. John. Now, this morning, I took my second home test for the coronavirus, and my viral load is much lower. It's down to a faint pink and red. My question is this test, two questions, to protect my well-being or to caution others? And shall I stay isolating until a negative test result comes up?
Hi, Pat. That's really an important question you're asking. And there's a lot of confusion about that. The CDC recommendations for how long you should isolate do not mandate a test. That is, the CDC says that after 5 days, if your symptoms are improving and you've not had fever for at least 24 hours, you can come out of isolation. But you should wear a mask when you're in higher risk situations, higher risk for other people, for the next 5 days. So a total of 10 days, you're away from other people, or at least have a mask on. So for those last 5 days, if you're going into a grocery store or a pharmacy or somewhere where indoors with other people who might be at increased risk of a bad outcome, you should be wearing a good mask. So the CDC doesn't call for testing to make the determination when you come out of isolation. I think that I think it's a good idea to test, because there is a correlation, and a fairly good correlation, not perfect, but a fairly good correlation between testing positive and how much virus you could be expelling from your nose and throat. So in your case, the dark line that you probably had at the beginning of your illness, and by the way, I'm glad you're getting better and getting well, the dark line suggests that you probably have a lot of virus that you're expelling. The fact that it's become paler now suggests that there's a lot less. My recommendation would be to wait until that test becomes negative and then come out of isolation. So what I typically tell people is, if you're getting better and it's been about 5 days and you don't have any fever and you test negative, come out of isolation, just wear a mask for the next 5 days. If you're still testing positive but getting better and don't have a fever, I'd still be more cautious and stay away from other people. That is, I'd stay in isolation until it becomes negative.
Our next question comes from Berkeley. We have listener Jane on the line. Jane, good morning. What is your question?
Hi, good morning. This milder form of COVID, do people still get long COVID from it?
I'm glad you asked that question, Jane, because there's a lot of confusion about long COVID. The answer is, and I would say the answer is, we think, because we don't have real solid data, particularly with the newer subvariants, that as the pandemic has gone along and we've evolved from the original strain to alpha to beta to gamma and so on, and delta, of course, that those earlier variants, the risk of long COVID was greater than with Omicron and its subvariants, more recent ones we've seen. So the risk appears to be less for developing long COVID with the more recent subvariants and Omicron in general than the earlier variants. That said, there's still a risk of getting long COVID, and it's substantial. The data from the United States suggests around 7% of people currently who get COVID can develop long COVID, or may develop long COVID. The United Kingdom data suggests that that number may be a little low, and it could be a little bit higher than that. So we're talking about millions and millions of people who are getting long COVID. And we've talked about this on this show before, and that is that I think one of the strong reasons for people to not get COVID is to prevent getting long COVID, because that can be really devastating to your life. The good news with these new subvariants is, as you said, they're milder. They tend to cause less severe symptoms, fewer hospitalizations, and fewer deaths. And that's really, of course, very good news. And probably less long COVID, but still a substantial number of people can get it.
We've got another listener on the line from Santa Cruz. Chris, in Santa Cruz, you are on the air. What is your question for Dr. Swartzberg?
Yeah, two questions. I think they're both quick. Thank you for your Monday program. I usually call join too late to call in, but got it early today. First of all, I'm 64 and had full vaccinations up to my last one in December of last year. So I figured, okay, I was good through March, April, I think, according to what I'd heard you say last year when those were up. So the one question is, I'm planning to travel in several weeks to Germany to visit some family. And I'm saying, so am I recommended now to get another booster? I mean, is that something that's on the schedule? I forget. Actually, maybe you already answered that, but I didn't hear it in the transition. So that's the one question. And the other question is Paxlovid. Should I call my doctor and get a preventative prescription to take? I've heard that's something, I guess, is done regularly sometimes when you're traveling. So that as well.
Hi, Chris. Two very, really important questions. The first question, you're traveling. I would get a booster. It will give you very good protection against getting infected, much less getting sick from that infection, for a month, 2 months, 3 months, take you through the summer, and you'll still be a candidate for the updated fall booster. So I would do that. In terms of your second question, Paxlovid, at 64, we don't have great data. We don't have really firm data that you would benefit from taking Paxlovid if you're in otherwise very good health. If you have some health problems, it could put you at higher risk for a bad outcome. I would definitely take a prescription of Paxlovid with you. If you were 75 and you were traveling outside of the country or traveling in general, just because of your age, you would be at higher risk for a bad outcome. And I would definitely recommend Paxlovid. But at 64 in good health, it's really very much a personal call because we don't have a lot of data showing that Paxlovid makes much of a difference today.
All right. We've got just one more minute. So I'm going to ask Dr. Swartzberg, one of our listeners asked what current COVID prevention recommendations for children are and said that children continue to be largely ignored in prevention efforts, in her opinion. With these final moments, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a very good point. The advice for children is the same advice for adults, and that is look at the health status of the child. Does the child have chronic respiratory problems, for example, that might put them in a higher risk situation? You'd want to be much more cautious. If the child is otherwise completely healthy, really a very personal decision. I think that healthy children today, are not at substantial risk of a bad outcome from COVID, and fewer precautions need to be taken. Precautions still include the same things: masking when at high-risk situations, trying to remain outside with people as opposed to inside. Those are critical things. And of course, there are vaccines available for children.
All right. That's all the time we have today. Thank you, Dr. Swartzberg, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for the next one, you can shoot an email anytime to upfront@kpfa.org, or you can tune in live. We normally broadcast Mondays just after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people, and we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.